Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play. Anywhere that you can find podcasts, make sure you subscribe. Leave us a five-star review. Tell your friends to subscribe. Check out the other podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network as well. You can find us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook at Locked On Bulls. And if your company is interested in advertising to men between the ages of 18 and 54, then your company should be advertising right here on our show. Our audience is 95% men, and 78% of our audience is between the ages of 18 and 44. Recent surveys have shown that podcast listeners are 65% more willing to consider purchasing products they learned about from podcasts, and 60%, given equal price and quality, prefer to purchase from companies that advertise on their favorite podcasts. Our rates are reasonable, so make sure you email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. Cody, I am in Oakland. You are not. I was in Sacramento last night. We're doing this from the road. We're giving it to the people.
That's what we do best, is we put the work in and just try to improve with each and every day.
Know your job, do your job.
That is very true. The Bulls currently have done their job, what, 26 times this season, Sean, and they haven't done their job as well as they needed to?
Yeah.
26 other times, because they have that exact 500 record. And the news of the day from the West Coast reverberating back to Chicago is that Casey Johnson, the Chicago Tribune, reported the jobs of Executive Vice President John Paxson and General Manager Gar Forman are safe this offseason. Even as the Bulls, what should we say, wallow in some inconsistencies,
mediocrity, whatever and word don't you exact use for it.
And don't exactly have a clear reaction or direction. So I wanted to ask Sean, what was your reaction to that?
I wasn't surprised. I've never really put too much stock into any of these reports that Gar or Pax were really in any danger. And just to be clear, that we're talking about in the middle of his mock draft on ESPN.com today, Chad Ford, who's the main draft guy for ESPN, said that he's hearing rumblings that the Bulls are considering a serious front office shakeup. And then KC reported from sources with knowledge of ownership's thinking that that's not the case, and the Gar and Pax are safe going into the offseason, even if they miss the playoffs. I would tend to trust KC's reporting on matters like this, and yeah, I wasn't too surprised. Like I've never gotten the impression from my limited dealings with ownership that there's really any danger. Certainly not for Pax. Maybe if this just completely flames out and nothing goes right this offseason, maybe Gar gets let go at some point, but I would be very surprised if a front office personnel change happened at any point in the near future.
I'm with you on the same page on Pax. The thing is, he's held so many different positions in this organization, dating back to his time as a player, hitting a game-winning shot to win a championship. He was an assistant coach, radio analyst, worked his way up the front office. And the thing that always I come back to is, he has the respect of the players in this organization. Every time he's spoken, I know Taj Gibson, Jimmy Butler, others on several occasions these last couple of years when the Bulls have had inconsistencies and Pax has said things, like, they really respect just his message every single time out. And I think that does carry something. It's just a broader reflection of how what he says still has meaning in this organization. And I mean, with the Bulls front office, we don't know. We can't parse all these moves down, like who made the decision to draft Tony Snell, who made the decision to draft Doug McDermott or trade two first-round picks and a trio of second-rounders for him. And when we don't know that, I think I kind of go back to Pax being a little bit higher ranking now. Like you mentioned, like if the season does go completely south, Sean, like the timing of this to me, I mean, I understand absolutely Casey's report kind of just rebutting the ESPN report, but at the same time, like, a lot can happen in the NBA, and remember, smart people always say never say never.
Yeah.
And to me, I trust Casey's reporting at this point. That's their plan and everything, but if it does really go south, which I don't think it's really going to go south, because Jimmy Butler's too good for somebody, does, like, to me, it's not Fred Hoiberg next on the firing block. It's Gar Forman or it's Gar Forman with Fred Hoiberg because that was his hand-picked hire. Again, don't think that's going to happen, but I would still say Gar's job security is always up in the air, a little bit fuzzier than John Paxton's, not as strong.
I would agree with you. I think Pax by far has more security. I would be shocked if Gar was not the GM going into training camp. I'm not saying it's impossible. It would just be very surprising to me.
Yeah, and you know, I was reading we know everything about the Reinsdorfs being so loyal, whether it's with the Bulls
right.
or the White Sox. But I was also reading a profile on Michael Reinsdorf from a feature story from ESPN.com dating back to 2012, just talking about how he handled his first year and a half as Bulls president, which I believe he took over sometime in 2010 or so, mm-hmm. or maybe early 2011. And like one of the things that stuck out to me was not only the funny part was how in 2012, how much he was preaching top-down collaboration, and it was just like a precursor to what was happening when they fired Tom Thibodeau 3 years later. Like the writing was on the wall because Michael came in and preached that. But he also, one of his favorite kind of quotes or sayings that he got from his father, Chairman Jerry Reinsdorf, was not to micromanage, to let like your executives, your management, your people do their job. And I think when Bulls fans, I think that might be reflective here and symbolic and explain a little something. I don't think it forgives any of these moves and the team not being as good as fans would want, not having a clear direction exactly per se. But I think it sheds light on how they're just going to let management run its course and see what they do. And right now, like, it's not bad. It's not awful. Like, okay, they're not 20 games below 500. They're 500. And they kind of expected to be somewhere around 500. I think they expect to be a little better. But they knew there weren't championship aspirations. So Michael sees that, and ownership sees that, and looks at it and goes, well, we knew we weren't going to win a championship. We are being competitive, and we're rebuilding this team little by little with young players. And that's maybe how he views it. I'm going to take the hands off, no micromanaging role, no reason to fire someone. I think that might shed light on it a little bit.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. Before we move on, we have to talk obviously about the game in Sacramento last night, the game against the Warriors tomorrow. But I want to just point out quickly that today's episode is brought to you by SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time, and it's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or that show that you want to go to. But none of those older ticket sites want to change that. SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. I personally have used SeatGeek several times to buy tickets for different concerts, sporting events, all kinds of stuff. I've always had great success. I've gotten great deals. I have the app on my phone. It's really easy to use. It's always the first place I go to look for tickets for anything. Everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does all the work and you save time and money. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. So you'll be able to see any overpriced seats, underpriced seats, and be able to find the ones that fit your budget. Best of all, Locked On Bulls listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. So what you got to do, listen to me here, go on the App Store, whether it's Apple, iTunes, Google Play, wherever, whichever App Store, get the free SeatGeek app on your phone, sign up, go to setting, click the tab, add a promo code, enter the promo code LOBULLS, LOBULLS, and SeatGeek will send you back $20 in a rebate after you've made your first ticket purchase. Again, download the SeatGeek app, promo code LOBULLS, and do that today, and you will get $20 back off your first purchase. So, Cody.
John, before we move on, okay. One point I wanted to get another reaction from you on.
On the Garpax
Yeah, there's a line in Casey Johnson's story in the Trib that says there's an internal feeling that Foreman's publicly stated goal to remain competitive while overhauling the roster over several seasons to get more athletic and younger is working. So again, a line that says Foreman's publicly stated goal is working. I kind of raise issue with that.
I mean, okay. Well, so you know what I would say that mean. You know what I would read into that. If I'm reading into what? If you're reading anything into that, I think that they're maybe not gonna. If they think that their current approach is working, maybe they're not gonna completely blow this thing up and trade Jimmy Butler over the summer.
That's my reaction. Actually, an excellent point from you that I didn't think too deeply into that angle yet. But I would like evidence for how the plan is working. Competitive, okay, because they are 26-26. It'd be the seventh seed in the playoffs if they started today. I don't think we expected a whole lot more. But this idea, I mean, at the basis of this idea is developing your young talent into better players, if not frontline guys, at least some different difference makers and strong rotation players. And these young guys, other than Chris Felicio, just haven't done that. So I raised the question.
Hey, and Paul Zipser.
How is this working? Hey, Paul Zipser went 0-3 for 0 points the other night against the Kings.
He had one bad game. He's fine. No, but I'm going to die on the Paul Zipser hill. I'm fully committed. I'm Team Zipser. But
I respect the dedication if I don't agree.
So I totally agree with you. I think it's, you know, you have to look at some of these guys, and I think it's really telling that Denzel Valentine was recalled from the D League. He played 3 games in the D League in the last week. He was recalled. He was with the team yesterday in Sacramento. Doug McDermott was terrible yesterday. Doug had one of the worst turnovers I've ever seen. Did you see this in the second quarter? He had the ball in the corner.
Threw the ball like
throws the ball back into the backcourt to Nico Mirotić, who I don't know why he was standing back there, but that was just one of the most careless and just inexplicable turnovers I've ever seen. But anyway, Doug was terrible. Denzel still couldn't get in. And today at practice, we asked Fred, you know, is Denzel going to get in? And he was sort of noncommittal about it. So I think that's a little bit of an indictment that your lottery pick from the most recent draft can't even get on the floor. On top of that, Bobby Portis, their first-round pick from last year, hasn't been good when he's played, and he's barely in the rotation. Michael Carter-Williams, who they traded for right before the season, has been in and out of the rotation. Jaren Grant's been in and out of the rotation. Like, none of these guys are really getting better.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's not even just that I don't see any logic in how you can say the plan is working, but I also see a problem here that you're not giving the plan a chance to work. Because if you were, Denzel Valentine would have had more opportunity by now. And unless you trade Taj Gibson in the next several weeks, which the Bulls may or may not do, that's still up in the air. We've talked about we would expect that they would, but there's talk that they're not, too. Like, they kind of want to make this playoff push. So that's still like a 50-50 thing. If you don't trade Taj, Bobby Portis is pretty much relegated the rest of the year to being out of the rotation.
Yeah.
So to me, and then when you're pulling Michael Carter-Williams in and out of the lineup where he's a starter one game and then goes to DNP, coach's decision designation, the next game, like I don't see how you're fully giving the plan a chance to work. And not only are you not giving it a chance, but now you're internally claiming and believing that it is working. Like, none of this makes sense to me. And I don't think a lot of the things the Bulls always do make sense, but I would like an explanation and more evidence on this one because it leaves an empty feeling, I think.
Yeah, I would have to say the idea that this plan is working, to me, I mean, that's going to be the last thing a lot of Bulls fans want to hear, because the vibe I've gotten from Bulls fans, not just talking to people, but also just, you know, looking at my Twitter mentions, is, you know, people are not happy with the way things are going. They want the most common sentiment I've gotten is they want people to just completely blow it up, you know, trade Jimmy Butler, completely start over from scratch, which I don't think is going to happen, as we talked about. But nobody is really looking at this thinking, you know what, I think the Bulls are really going in the right direction. I love the youth movement. All these players are great. You know, this is really working. I don't think any fan sentiment is behind that.
No, and I agree with that. And you brought up the vibe of the fans. I want to ask, what was the vibe of the locker room in Sacramento after the Bulls won on Monday night? And I mean, it was, I don't know if I want to say dramatic fashion, because I don't know if blowing a 27-point lead and then beating a team you should beat is like all that legendary, but the Bulls were up 27 and then were tied, and then Dwayne Wade made a pair of big plays. Like, how are the Bulls feeling right now, Sean? Good, bad, worried, great?
I think they were pretty happy that they didn't blow another lead, because that's been kind of the story with them lately. They lost that game to Atlanta that kicked off all the, you know, infighting for a week, and then in Houston the other day they had a lead with a couple minutes to go. They blow that lead, and again they didn't have Jimmy Butler, so you know that's going to happen at some point. But you have a 27, even without Jimmy Butler, you should be able, the Bulls are more talented than the Kings. They should be able to beat the Kings. Obviously DeMarcus Cousins is incredible, but the rest of that roster, I was just watching it and it was like, wow, okay, Anthony Tolliver is like playing a significant role on this team, and like Malachi Richardson, apologies to Nick Friedell, shout out to Syracuse, he was playing a lot of minutes, and you know that's a team the Bulls should beat even without Jimmy Butler. And they looked like they were going to, but they had a 27-point lead in the second half, and they completely blow the lead. They Kings tie it up. DeMarcus has a chance to take the lead with a free throw, which he misses. Wade gets the rebound, and then the Bulls are able to put it away. But they were pretty relieved. Like that could have gotten bad if they had blown that lead. 27 points, especially.
Yeah.
And this is just kind of a funny anecdote, but at the end of the third quarter, the Bulls are up 16 still. They were up 27 at one point in the third quarter. Okay. They were up 16. And the Kings have this hype man. And by the way, their new arena is gorgeous. Yeah. It is fantastic. So there's that. But anyway, it's like they have the hype man, and the hype man goes, "All right, Kings fans, if you watch the Super Bowl, you know that comebacks can happen." Like he was playing this angle all the way up.
This hype man was completely separate from their weird-looking mascot that Robin Lopez beat up like three times. These are two separate entities.
Yeah. No, this is like their PA announcer, like stepping out and doing some hype man stuff.
Okay. Well, long live the Kings and everything that comes with their experience, because, I mean, it was the Boogie Cousins effect again. He got two technicals in that game, including, I don't know, it wasn't a full-on shove of Bulls assistant Jim Boylan, but he definitely shoved his hand away during some antics in which Taj Gibson got a technical foul. Jim Boylan went out there to back his player up, and then Matt Barnes got mad. Boogie, again, is something else. Like, what did the Bulls make of that hubbub, that fight, that small brouhaha, I guess you would call it?
Well, Dwayne basically said that Boylan held his own. And the funny part is I was in the locker room just kind of waiting for guys to talk, and like Taj and Dwayne were sitting by each other, and they were watching it on their phone and on one of their phones, and like they hadn't seen in real time that Boogie had shoved Jim Boylan. They thought it was just like the normal, you know, a normal altercation. So they were just kind of cracking up over that, and then Wade had some comment like, "Hey, Boylan held his own. He's a tough guy."
That's pretty awesome when you think about it. I did want to point out too that the Kings, on Dwayne Wade's steal and dunk to clinch the game when the Bulls were up two and the Kings had the ball, the Kings ran the exact same play they ran in Chicago when they were needing a late game bucket.
Right.
They just inbounded the ball to Boogie Cousins 35 feet from the hoop, and I think there's something to Dwayne Wade being a veteran, following the scouting report, and being a really smart basketball player, and just seeing, once again, Boogie's outside the three-point line. We already know what's going to happen. And maybe Dwayne Wade got away with a little bit of a hold or something there. But when you're the Kings, come up with a little bit better play than the one that didn't work last time and involves your 7-foot, like 280-pound guy having to dribble 35 feet from the hoop. You know what I mean? Like, props to the Bulls, but the Kings didn't. For all their efforts of the 27-point comeback, it kind of made you shake your head there, too. A team that will make you shake your head for different reasons, Sean, the Golden State Warriors, who the Bulls play on Wednesday night.
Well, first, I need to talk about this real quick. DeMarcus Cousins gets ejected with 1.1 seconds left in the game. And this is on the day, like, right before this game started, Vlade Divac, the Kings GM, goes on record with Mark Stein at ESPN and says, "We're not trading DeMarcus Cousins." And then this goes out and happens. And by the way, DeMarcus picked up his 16th technical on the season, so now he's going to be suspended tomorrow when they play Boston. So that's just like the Boogie Cousins experience, just like in total, all the good, all the bad, everything.
Yeah, at this rate, he's going to be suspended like four more times this year, because he gets a technical foul once every three games, basically, or once every 3.2 games. Like, If he even comes close to that rate, he's going to be suspended 3, 4, 5 more games.
How close?
Which is just crazy to think about.
How close do you think he gets to Rasheed Wallace's all-time record of 41 technicals in a season?
He won't, and only because they dock you like what? Like $150,000 or something every game, basically, is what he's giving up.
Something
it's like 1/110th of your salary. And for Boogie, like, that amounts to a lot of money because he gets paid a ton. Well, not a ton, but he's on a
15,
big contract.
Million.
Like
an old CBA.
Yeah,
max.
So like he's getting docked quite a bit when he misses a game. So I don't think he wants to get docked a ton of money 4 more times, 5 more times this year. And it would take more than that to get close to Rasheed's record. If Rasheed, they didn't have the rule where you get suspended and docked pay, like maybe he could approach Rasheed's record.
They
which
put
is
that rule
really
in there because of Rasheed.
Record.
That's the most unbreakable record in sports. That's more unbreakable than Wilt Chamberlain's 100 points in a game. That's more unbreakable than by the way, speaking of 100 points in a game,
DiMaggio's hitting streak.
Speaking of 100 points in a game, but you see that LaMelo Ball, the younger brother of Lonzo Ball, the UCLA guard, scored 92 points in a high school game today. Do you see that? I just saw that on Twitter.
All I saw was the same exact thing on Twitter and people tweeting their speechlessness, basically.
I just saw this.
I don't know how he fits into the Bulls' future point guard scheme, but if they like want to start priming for the 2019 or 20 draft or something, maybe like go for it. You know, I'm all for that, and I think that's a bigger discussion too, because we know how many great point guards are in this draft. But did want to touch a little bit on the Warriors Wednesday night. The Bulls, they played the Warriors tough usually the past few years. A couple of years ago, even got a win with the Kirk Heinrich heroics at Oracle Arena. But this time, I think it's probably a little different, would you say, Sean?
Yeah, the Warriors have Kevin Durant now, so that's kind of a thing. And just for a little bit of housekeeping here, we don't know yet whether Jimmy Butler is going to play. He's still listed as questionable. I would guess that he does play because, you know, this is the Warriors, is a big game. He has been getting shots up. I think if last night were a playoff game, he would have played, but he didn't play because it was against the Kings. I would guess that he does play against the Warriors. And also, this is kind of a surprise because Cristiano Felicio, who injured his leg in the game against Houston on Friday, the thought previously was that he would be out for at least a week, but the Bulls sent out the injury report today and listed him as questionable, so at least maybe it's on the table that maybe he plays tomorrow, which is possible, which that would certainly be a good thing for the Bulls. I'm not going to bet on that, but it's certainly possible.
We have any word on what Michael Carter Williams' role is going to be, assuming Jimmy Butler returns? MCW's had a couple really good games in a row. I mean, probably his two best games as a Bull. You could probably go with and argue there.
You know what?
Showing some offensive prowess. Like, what do you think is going to happen with Jimmy back with him?
I've given up trying to figure out what Fred Hoiberg's rotation is going to be, but MCW has certainly played well enough the last couple of games to earn a spot in the rotation going forward. You know, we just need to find out, you know, is that going to be at the expense of maybe Jaren Grant? Is that going to be at the expense of Rajon Rondo again with everything that comes with that? It'll be interesting to see what happens, but MCW, I think for the time being, has played himself back into the rotation. Especially,
yeah,
you know, a game against a team like the Warriors, you know, he and Jimmy are basically their only two real perimeter defenders, and the Warriors shoot so many three-pointers that, you know, you're going to want to see, you're going to want MCW out there, you know, bothering guys like Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant on the perimeter.
Yeah, it's just I could see that matchup basis maybe. I still think that Jaren Grant just fits a little bit better with that first unit because he shoots better from the outside. And when Jimmy gets a defense out of position, I think he's got some potential slash into the hoop. He needs to play too, like, you know, Sean, like all these guys just need to play more minutes. And the Bulls need to see what all these young guys are. They'll face their probably toughest test of the year, you would probably say.
Yeah.
At Golden State on Wednesday night. We'll try to keep you updated with all things Locked On Bulls. Sean, of course, will be there.
Yeah, I will probably record with somebody out here. I make no promises, but that's the tentative plan.
Sounds great. Until then, you can follow Sean on Twitter at Hyken, myself at Cody Westerlin, follow Locked On Bulls at Locked On Bulls. You can find us right there on Facebook as well. And most of all, please subscribe to our podcast. You can email us too at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. With basketball questions, advertising inquiries, always welcome. But give us that subscription on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, Google, TuneIn. What'd I miss?
Podbean. We're on Podbean. One of your roommates was big on Podbean, so we're on there. Check out the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network as well. Super Bowl just happened this weekend, so check out Locked On Falcons for the misery, Locked On Patriots for the celebration. Draft is coming up, so you know all that kind of stuff. Every NBA team, every NFL team, all have Locked On podcasts, so make sure you check those out.
All right. Until next time.
Yeah, thanks for listening.